This is the United States. Planning to stay long?
Oh, no, sir. Just as soon as I can find a ship, I'm heading for China. I'm a flyer.
China? Well. Hey, how old are you, son?
17.
Well, suppose you put off this China trip for a few minutes and take a walk with me. How about it, son? We'll drop in and have a chat with the precinct captain. You mind?
Too bad. Deported back to Canada. All that way out and back for nothing. Too bad, George. Sound pretty smug, don't I? Well, so did the people who met George after he got back. But the world I was so sure of, and the one they were so sure of, was cracking up. And a new world was shaping up. One for that young man. Did I mention the date? September 1939. Britain at war with Germany. And Canada was headed in. Where did that leave the smug people? You and me.
Is this where I join the Royal Canadian Air Force?
This is the recruiting office, yes.
That's what I want. Well, what do I sign? Name's George Burling, age 18, born in Canada. Now, here's my logbook to show how many hours I've had in the air. Is there anything else? Just tell me where to report.
Just a moment, young man. We can leave the logbook till later.
Oh, sure. I don't want you to think I'm boasting. It's just that
schooling,
I'm anxious.
Please.
Oh, I chucked that a long time ago, when I was 15.
No college, then?
No, sir, I didn't have time. Was something wrong?
I'm afraid, Burling, a cadet in the RCAF requires a college education.
But I'm a flyer. That's what you're recruiting, isn't it, flyers?
Now, look here, young man.
You mean if I was a glassblower and had passed college algebra, I'd stand a chance?
Hardly the way to put it. But the regulations
state... Why don't
you
take your regulations?
Now, young man. Dear, it does seem a shame.
Poor old Duffer. That officer didn't make the regulations. And the men who did didn't know what makes a plane stay up any more than I do now. They learned, eventually, from kids like Burling.
Take that hangdog look off your face.
Yeah, maybe someday somebody will let me push a broom around the barracks by trigonometry.
I know how you feel, but remember, George, this is going to be everybody's war, sooner or later. This is the big show. Now, why don't you bone up on the book knowledge? You'll get your chance. Meantime, how about a hot dog?
I don't feel like a hot dog right now.
Hey, wait a minute. You must be sick. What you need for that is a good hot dog. All right. So you're sick of book learning. You're sick of this. You're sick of that.
Except one thing. I want to fly. I want to get over there where they're flying.
All right. Why don't you go?
That's a fine thing to say to me. Thought you were a friend of mine. I know you get tired of hearing...
Okay, kid, okay. Maybe that wasn't the way to break it to you. But you can get over there. You can get into the RAF.
Oh, are you crazy?
By working your way over on one of the neutral freighters. They're begging for men. Can't get them. Maybe it was a bad way to break the good news to you.
A boy who didn't know one end of a ship from another signed on as a deckhand to get over to England. Worked 4 on and 4 hours off. Through the marauding sub-packs. And when he'd see a plane overhead, he'd think of the sea.
This is not my element. It's not my element.
Boy, I wish I was in that plane up there.
No, it's not your element. But it'll get you there. To Liverpool, anyway. And you'll bum a pound of your wages off the captain before you jump ship. And on the dock, you'll meet a policeman.
How you fix for flyers over here?
By the look of things, we ruddy well need as ruddy many as we can ruddy well get.
Seems to me I've landed in great ruddy Britain. Where do I find the air recruiting station?
Well, you go out there and take the dotted...
That's my story, sir. Now, will you tell me the shortest way to get into the RAF?
Splendid. Simple as pie now. Let's have a look at your papers.
Oh, I haven't got any papers. I can send for my logbook.
Oh, it's not the logbook that worries me, old chap. It's your birth certificate. Now, what about your birth certificate?
I never saw one in my life.
Too bad, old boy, too bad. Afraid I'll have to ask you to go back and get it. Oh, now, don't look so black, old chap.
Where do you think the Burlings live, across the street? I came here from Canada.
Sorry to cause you all the trouble, old boy. Regulations, you know. Got to have a birth certificate. Don't blame me. Just the ruddy old regs.
And if he didn't do it, worked his way back to Canada, across the Atlantic, and back again to Liverpool. With his birth certificate and his logbook, he plunks them down on the officer's desk in the middle of an air raid.
There. Does that satisfy you? There's my ruddy birth certificate, and there's my ruddy logbook.
Sorry, old chap. All this noise popping can't hear you. Oh, Burling. Well, well. Took you quite a while to get those papers, old boy. Oh, now. Don't look so black. Ruddy regulations, you know. And now you'll have the privilege of wearing the motto of the RAF. Per ardua ad astra.
I can't hear you.
Per ardua ad astra. Latin, old boy. Latin.
I don't know any Latin. Hey, do I have to know Latin?
Hey, what does it mean? Well, I guess you could say it meant to the stars, the hard way.
He made it. And that's just the beginning. Because when you're a kid like Burling with a fixed idea in your head, and all you want to do is fly and fight while you're flying, well, then maybe it takes a while to put you in the shape you belong in. Because there are others like you, too, with the same determinations and desires, who've all got to be trained to fight, not each for himself, but together as a perfect team.
That's rank insubordination, Burling.
I didn't come all the way over here to learn how to parade. I came to fly.
Burling! Burling!
Well, what is it now?
I don't mind telling you it was a pretty poor business up there today.
I got Jerry, though, didn't I?
Naturally. Pulling off from formation, any of us can be a hero. Part one for ourselves. Your job's to keep the tail of the plane ahead of you clear.
And just be a sitting duck for any Nazi, sure.
If you don't mind my saying so, pretty poor sportsmanship, Burling. Good day.
Burling, you've been fighting with the sergeant.
Well, why doesn't he cut out all these regulations and let us stick to our work?
The fact remains, Burling, the sergeant has a black eye.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. He must have run into a door. You know, there's a lot of doors around here who don't take to him, sir.
Come in, Burling. Sit down.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to recommend you for a commissioned rank. In spite of some difficulties, I think you're officer material.
No, thank you, sir. I'd better stay the way I am. I feel like a pilot, but not like an officer.
Like a pilot, eh, do you?
I hope I am, sir, a pilot.
You'll be a pilot, Burling, if you remember this war is won by teamwork. And I think, too, you would do better to save your natural belligerency for the Nazis. They'll be where you're going.
I agree, sir.
I hope you do. Good luck.
Where was he going? It's no secret now. He was going to Malta, where there were 250,000 prisoners. That's what the Axis called the people on Malta. But that bit of rock stuck like a pit in the craw of the Axis, preventing it from swallowing the whole of Africa. It's easy at this date now to forget that tiny, bomb-blasted piece of rock in the Mediterranean between Italy and Africa, and the handful of planes that defended it. But George Burling won't forget it. The scrambles when Ops announced,
"Enemy planes approaching! Scramble!"
And the mugs of coca that went flying out of the man's hands as they plunged out of the canteen. Chairs overturned, poker games interrupted, heading for their planes to rise over Malta to meet the superior numbers of the enemy and their bombers, relentlessly trying to blast Malta into submission. And in there, as part of the RAF team, George Burling, getting his share of the enemy plane. One. Two. Three. Four.
Sometimes it was just one burst of fire from his gun, so accurate was his aim.
Fire!
Willie, a green hammer up your tail for you. Are you all right? Will you watch it?
Thanks, old man. Do the same for you someday.
For crying out loud, keep your eyes peeled.
I can't see everything. Oh, be back later.
You see, he's learned he's part of a team. Not just George Burling against the stubborn world that won't let him fly, but a part of the RAF against the fascists. But life in Malta was no setup. Malta was a besieged block in an Axis-controlled sea. And planes have got to have oil and gas to fight with. These young men haven't wings on their shoulder blades to fly against well-supplied Stukas and Messerschmitts. Where's the oil coming from? Where's it coming from?
Like bumps on a log, we sit here.
Read your magazine, Georgie. Look at the pretty pictures.
I read it from cover to cover. 3 times.
Now, take it easy. This is a big lull.
Yeah, before the kill. And Malta's a dish of cold meat for the Jerrys to slice up any time they want to.
I tell you, I don't want that car.
What do you mean?
I said I don't want that car. It was from the bottom of the deck.
Are you trying to tell me that
yes,
I would...
Yes, that's the second time I've brought you
to pick up. Break this,
don't you're not the only one that has a frayed edge, George.
I don't see how you can keep calm. Don't you want to get up there and paste them flat against the blue?
Can't use that precious gas just splitting around.
Then why don't they get it to us, oil and gas? What do they expect us to do?
Better start reading your magazine again, George,
I'm speaking. Convoy approaching. Under enemy attack. Scramble.
Go, George, scramble.
I was on a ship once a freighter.
Scramble.
I know what it means to feel go trapped down there.
You won't be now.
I'm in my own element now.
Suppose you had been one of the people in Malta. You can see off on the horizon the cargo ships bringing oil and food. Oil for the planes that mean your life. Food for all of you, pilot and civilian, for the life of Malta. You can see the bombs falling. You can see the Nazi planes diving. To bomb the ships that mean your life, the machine gun, the deck. You can see, too, those kids of the RAF and their planes. Your planes, zooming up to fight for those ships. For your life. You wouldn't be able to hear those kids talking to each other on their phones as they fight.
George! George! You see him? Down like a stone.
I saw him, Willie. Damaged for sure.
A damaged, a destroyed, a wreck. Well, trick to butting these Jerrys if you keep your wits about you. The flag is almost asking to shoot him down.
Yeah, but did you ever hear what happens to little boys who don't keep the tails of their planes clean of Jerrys?
Ah, that from Burling, the boy who gets his daily dust.
Willie, all right? Willie!
Don't give it a thought. Look out, George!
Bloody missus. Think I'm a bone to pick apart. I got it. Right in the gas tank.
Bit of advice, George, old boy. Keep your mind on your work. And don't try to take on a flock of 20. Leave some for the rest of us.
Why, you ready?
And you, standing below on Malta, watching, hoping, praying. You wonder you want to cheer when another Nazi plane hits the sea? You know, too, how it feels when you see one of those ships get a bomb down its smokestack.
Did you see that ship, Willie? Fired up like a sheet of flimsy. And then out.
That's right. I'm offering a little target package myself.
I'm right on your tail.
The convoy limps nearer and nearer to the docks. Still, the Nazis won't let up. Sinking ship after ship, the oil in them, and the men. Will any of that battered convoy ever get in? Ever?
It's got to. It's going to. Right in your Nazi belly. Right where I cross. Your work's over, Mr. Jerry. Go ahead, bail out while there's time. That's it. Go down there and wait to be fished out of the drink by the people you're trying to murder. But good luck to you, you Nazi, under your cloud of soap. Hey! That's one of your own men, you Messerschmitts! Willie!
Yeah, George?
You see what I did? Those guys machine gunning one of their own men in his parachute.
I saw it, George. Maybe he thought it was one of us.
As if he were a dummy. Look at him hanging there. Whip as a strung up duck. Suppose that'd have been you, Willie. Tufty and or me.
Just as you say, George. Could be.
Now I know what I'm fighting. Now I know why I'm fighting. I hate them. I hate their way of life. I hate their hatred of life. My life, of Willie's, or the guys down there in Malta. Even their hatred of their own lives. All right, I'll fight them. I'll fight them till I can't fight anymore. From now on out, it's me or them.
George! George! On your tail! Look out!
And you, standing down there on Malta, you who know your life depends on men like George Burling, you stand and watch that Spitfire of his twist down through the sky. 3,000 feet, 2,500 feet, 2,000 feet. You want to yell with Willie.
Bail out, George! Bail out! I'll cover you!
1,500 feet. 1,000 only above the Mediterranean. And then he jumps. You see his parachute open like a burst of flak against the sky. He's floating down to safety.
I've got you covered, boy. You're all right. I'll cover your thick old Canadian hide.
He's drifting down, held by a parachute. He hits the water, manages to crawl into his rubber dinghy. And the bottom of that dinghy fills red with the blood of George Burling. You know who to cheer the most now as the remaining ships of the convoy pull safely into the dock at Malta? Those battered ships or the pilots like George Burling who helped save the ships? Now, you just cheer anyway. And you hear the pumps get going. Sucking the oil out of the holds of those ships so those RAF planes can keep Malta still safe for the United Nations. But George Burling has chunks of cannon shell in his ribs, his elbow, his heel, and his left leg. The future belongs to men like George Burling. He was in the hospital for weeks, yes, and convalescing for months. But not now. He's back over there now, in the fight. When you think of him, when you think of how he and others like him were a team that helped the convoys through the turning of the tide and held Malta, then think also of that earlier kid.
That's an era cobra.
The future belongs to him. The future of a world that kids like George Burling are helping rid forever of fascists and fascism.
You have heard the 10th program of Words at War, a series based on the leading war books. This evening, we presented Malta Spitfire by Flying Officer George F. Burling and Leslie Roberts. The adaptation was by Kenneth White. Next week, listen to Words at War at our new time, Thursday evening, 11:30 p.m. Eastern War Time, over most of these stations. You'll hear Burma Surgeon by Dr. Gordon S. Seagrave. In our play tonight, Don McLaughlin was the narrator. Joe Julian was George Burling. Other members of the cast were Irene Hubbard, Lon Clark, John Griggs, Peter Hernandez, Ian McAllister, Maurice Toplin, and Harold Young. The original music was written and conducted by Frank Black. The production was under the direction of Joseph Losey. Thank you. This program has been presented in cooperation with the Council on Books in Wartime by the National Broadcasting Company and the independent radio stations associated with the NBC network. The program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
He had used up his chances. On the island of Ie, before a burst of Jap machine gun fire, Ernie Pyle, America's best-loved war correspondent, died as so many American boys he'd written about. Ernie Pyle was killed in action. Presents Words at War, dramatizing the most representative books to come out of this great world conflict. Our original schedule called for the presentation of another book, but the death of Ernie Pyle in the Pacific made his Brave Men the timeliest program we could bring you tonight. And so we bring you the stories Ernie Pyle wrote about the American fighting men, the songs they sang together and loved so well. Here as a tribute to the little guy who held the love and affection of every American soldier he ever met is Ernie Pyle's last book, entitled with his simple eloquence, Brave Men.
What is it like before battle? What do they think about? Well, they're afraid. But not afraid of the physical part of dying. That isn't the way it is. The emotion is rather one of almost desperate reluctance to give up the future. To give up such things as seeing the old lady again, of going on to college, of getting married, of holding on your knee just once the kid you've never seen. Of becoming the champion salesman of your territory, of driving a coal truck around Kansas City once more. Yes, even of sitting in the sun again on the south side of a house in New Mexico. It's these little hopes and ambitions for some bright tomorrow that makes up the sum total of the worry and anxiety in the hearts of the waiting men. I don't think you can ever fully understand the ties that grow between men who live savagely together, relentlessly communing with death. They're ties of great strength. There's a sense of fidelity to each other in a little core of men who've endured so long and whose hope in the end can be so small.
Lieutenant.
Yes, Sergeant.
Well, I'm supposed to go back to rest camp tonight.
I know, Buck.
But we're due to attack tonight.
Yeah.
Well, Lieutenant, I don't think I'd better go. I'll stay if you need me.
Of course I need you, Buck. I always need you. But it's your turn, and I want you to go.
Well, I'd just as soon stay, sir.
I know, but you're going. That's an order, Buck.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I can't leave my buddies. No, I can't leave my buddies. I'm a poor, lone lonesome cowboy and a long ways from home.
This was in Italy. Sergeant Buck, a cowboy from Idaho, came back to the little group of old-timers with whom I was standing. You'd have thought he was leaving forever.
Well, I guess I'll be going. Good luck to you all.
Thanks, Buck.
Get yourself a good rest.
Yeah, I'll only be gone 5 days.
Sure. You'll be back before you know it.
Yeah, well, so long, everybody.
So long, kid.
And, good luck.
Good luck to you,
thanks,
Buck.
Thanks, Buck. Take me back to be near them. Take me back to be near them. I'm a poor, lonesome cowboy and a long ways from home.
It was drizzling and the valleys were swathed in a dismal mist. The artillery of both sides flashed and rumbled around the horizon. The encroaching darkness was heavy and foreboding. I walked with Buck to the waiting truck. He kept his eyes on the ground. And I think he might have cried if he'd known how.
Ernie.
Yeah, Buck?
This'll be the first battle I ever missed with this battalion.
Yeah.
I sure do wish them luck.
Well, they know that.
I feel like a deserter.
I went back and lay down on the ground with my other friends waiting for the night orders to march. I lay there in the darkness thinking, terribly touched by the great simple devotion of that soldier who was a cowboy. Thinking of the millions of people far away at home who would remain forever unaware of this feeling of the soldier for his comrades.
And you know what's the first thing I'm going to do when I get home?
What?
I'm going to fix it so my kid won't have to fight in the next war.
How are you going to do that?
Well, I'll tell you. First of all, I'm going to take him up on a garage roof and put 10-pound weights in his hands and make him jump off. That ought to break down the arches.
Yeah.
Then I think I'll feed him a little ground glass every now and then to give him a bad stomach.
That ought to make him 4F all right.
Yeah, and I'll make him read by candlelight to ruin his eyes. When I get through with him, he'll be double 4F.
Joe, if I didn't know you so well, I'd say you don't like it over here.
Oh, you know me better than that. I just love this nice mud and that German artillery. Listen, if I ever get home, they'll have to catch me to bring me back again.
Go on. You'd be home a couple of weeks and read about us over here and remember these bull sessions. Why, you'd bust out bawling. You'd be so homesick.
Yeah, well, just give me the chance, that's all. Just give me the chance.
Oh, the guns, guns, and the pretty, pretty Huns. What a war. What a war. Oh, the guns, guns, and the pretty, pretty Huns. What a lovely, lovely war.
But they tell me that a lot of American soldiers who return to America do get homesick for the front. They get an itch for the old, miserable life, a disgusting, illogical yearning to be back again in a place they hated. I'm sure it's true, but I know a lot of soldiers who'd like a chance to put the theory to the test. Behind me is a distinguished and unbroken record for being sick in every country I ever visited. I'd been in Sicily 5 days when I decided to get sick and get it over with. Well, they established me in a clearing station and finally decided I had battlefield fever. You don't die of that. You just think you will. As I began to feel better, I became aware of the wounded and the dying men who were constantly being brought into the tent.
I feel okay. I think I'm going to make it, Doc.
Of course you will. You'll be all right.
Let me go. I can walk all right. Hey, your bed's here. Lord, how I want to go to bed.
Well, there's nothing wrong with me, Doc. You don't call this little scratch anything. Let me out of here.
We've got to take care of that wound, son. We're going to send you back to the hospital.
I don't want to go to any hospital. I want to get back to my outfit.
You wouldn't do your outfit any good right now, son. You go on to the hospital. I've got some good-looking nurses there.
I don't care about any nurses. I want to get back to where I belong,
now,
sir.
Now, take it easy, soldier. Take it easy.
It was flabbergasting to me to lie there and hear wounded men cuss and beg to be sent right back into the fight. Of course, not all of them did that. It depended on the severity of their wounds and their individual personalities, just as it would in peacetime. But the main impression I got from all the wounded was their wonderful spirit and the thoughtful and attentive attitude of the men who cared for them. Well, eventually, after having indulged myself long enough to keep up my sick record, I got back to the front. Frontline conversation.